Welcome to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Laub. This show is about care hero topics that nobody wants to talk about. Perhaps you tended to a younger sibling's cut finger or babysat a neighbor's child. Maybe you were thrown into the fire and became a care hero during a medical crisis. You may care for a parent, spouse, sibling, a child, or a friend, but the challenges are the same. Getting the tools you need to navigate the maze of unfamiliar options can be overwhelming. I know, I have been there. I didn't even know what I didn't know. I am here to help you with all of it. No care hero topic is off limits. I am here to share with you concise, actionable information, as well as my fresh perspective about Alzheimer's and providing dignified care through the end of life for anyone with a life-altering diagnosis. So grab a cup of your favorite beverage, sit back, and let me help you on your care hero journey. We will talk and share, we may laugh, and we may share a tear or two, and we will always share a cup of comfort. Hi, Care Heroes. I'm Trish Laub, and welcome to A Cup of Comfort with me. This show is all about you, people providing care for someone to whom you are a care hero. Let's get right to it. As I've said several times, one of my greatest care hero concerns was whether or not I could deliver my parents' wishes for dignified care and a dignified, peaceful end of life. I want to read a brief section of my second book in the Comfort in Their Journey book series, Peaceful Endings, Guiding the Walk to the End of Life and Beyond. It says, several times when my mom was in the hospital, a nurse would casually mention that mom qualified for palliative care services. We were told that the purpose of palliative care was to provide comfort for the patient. Honestly, we didn't really understand what that service could provide for mom, and we were too caught up in the crisis to stop to ask or try to understand. We knew that we were providing mom with what we believed was everything she could need at home to be comfortable. It was not until about 2 weeks prior to my dad's passing that my family initiated hospice services for dad. We understood that hospice services provided support and care during the end-of-life process, but beyond that, we really didn't understand that service either. And a little bit further in, I wrote, I believe that palliative care and hospice care are among the most misunderstood and most valuable services offered in medicine. Let me say that again. I think that they are the most misunderstood and most valuable services offered in medicine. These beneficial approaches are surrounded by myth and misinformation. So four events led me to do today's show. The first was, even within the medical system, no one could really explain to me what palliative care was, except for a brief description of it as comfort care. No one could explain to me what it offered or how it worked. Second, once we initiated hospice care, we were assigned a case manager and an RN, which for us was the same person. She was nothing short of an angel. I now know that we should have initiated that service long before we did with each parent. Third, in the 1990s, I heard the whispering about a Dr. Kevorkian who championed a terminal patient's right to die with physician assistance. What he did was illegal, and he served time in jail. But his work has led to services that now legally allow terminal patients to determine not only the quality of their life, but also to make the choice about their death. Since then, I attended a presentation by my guest for today on the topic of death with dignity, and I was quite surprised to learn how very different it is from what I might have imagined. And finally, the fourth event I recently heard Being Patient's Deborah Kahn interview Kelly Bone, who is a woman who comes from a long line of women who have lived with Alzheimer's and who was recently diagnosed with early onset at 56 years old. Kelly hopes to utilize the services provided by Death with Dignity, which is currently unavailable in the United States to those diagnosed with dementia. The interview illuminated the misunderstanding and inaccurate terms that surround the topic of death with dignity, terms such as euthanasia, assisted suicide, and medical aid in dying. As a result of hearing Kelly speak and then following up with her on a phone call, I wrote an article called Discussing Death with Dignity for beingpatient.com to help clarify that terminology. How many of you listening really know what palliative care, hospice care, and death with dignity are? I can't say that I truly did until I spoke with my guest. My guest and I are here today to talk about three services that are options, not to say that anyone has to use them, but rather to give voice to your choice. Before I introduce my guest, I want to remind everyone that some of the information from today's show, including a link to Kelly Bone's interview and the article that I wrote as a result of that interview, they'll be available in a downloadable PDF on the Care Hero Radio page of my website, which is Trish Laub, that's L-A-U-B as in boy, .com after the show. Sky O'Neill is a recently retired physician's assistant who practiced in the area of end-of-life care, including palliative care, hospice care, and medical aid in dying, which is referred to as MAID, for over 25 years. She's a member of and the Colorado State Liaison for the American Clinicians Academy on Medical Aid in Dying. She's working with a group of colleagues to form a foundation to help enhance access to aid for Colorado for Colorado residents. Sky has recently formed a private consulting business, Skylight LLC, to provide community education and private counseling to those looking for assistance maneuvering the landscape of end-of-life care and options. Welcome, Sky.
Thank you, Trish. I'm so honored and glad to be here. And thank you for all of the previous broadcasts. I've learned so much from you and from your guests. And my intention today is to provide information to you and your audience that will help them gain knowledge and help in looking at all of the options around end-of-life care and give voice to the choices that they may make in the future should they ever be faced with an illness that is considered to be life-limiting.
That's so important.
Yes, it's important for all of us. Yes. And so many of us are aging right now that, as you know, the statistics on the baby boomers aging into towards the end of our lives is staggering. I thought I would start with a bit of a story to illustrate the path that someone might go through from the beginning of an illness until their death. So we'll use the story of Sam, who was a gentleman in his 60s, who about in 2016 was diagnosed with colorectal cancer. He saw his oncologist, and together they devised a plan of surgery and chemotherapy. Sam underwent both surgery and the round of chemotherapy, did as well as could be expected, and was living knowing that the possibility of recurrence existed, but doing quite well. 2 years later, he did in fact have recurrence and was offered another course of chemotherapy. At that time, his oncologist hooked Sam up with a palliative care service in home so that he was receiving chemotherapy, but was introduced to the idea of palliative care. And we'll go much further into that definition as we travel along here today. But at the palliative care physician, social worker, and nurse in his home. In those first few visits, they discussed things like advanced directives, goals of care in the event that the therapy was not curative for Sam any longer. They provided psychosocial support for his wife and his family, and also spiritual support in the form of a chaplain if Sam would have wanted to access that. They met about once a month in home, and then Sam had the ability to email them with any questions or concerns. And one of the major things that the palliative care team did was help Sam with his symptoms. As we all know, chemotherapy can leave a person debilitated in many ways, and there are so many modalities now, medications and otherwise, to help alleviate or minimize some of that. So this plan was working out beautifully until the chemotherapy failed Sam, and he was no longer able to tolerate the side effects or the medication. He sat for a bit, hoping to get a little stronger. In fact, he did. And then the next step is that he was offered a course of radiation. At this time, the oncologist, palliative care team, Sam and his family all sat together, and based on Sam's goals of care, his own voice, not anyone else's agenda, he elected to proceed with a short course of radiation, and he did. It did leave him greatly fatigued, and he elected to not proceed The risk benefit ratio to Sam was not high enough for him to go further. So he stopped any of the treatment and then kept on with the palliative care team at home. Over the course of the next couple of months, he became more debilitated, his condition was worsening, and his disease was advancing. At this time, a conversation was held in which hospice care was recommended to Sam. And because the palliative care team he was already seeing was associated with the hospice agency, the transition from palliative care to hospice care for Sam and his family was seamless. It took a day for him to transition from one type of care to another. So you can see as we look back that the idea of introducing palliative care as early in the course of an illness as possible is beneficial to the psychosocial aspect, to the emotional aspect of the whole well-being of the individual. He began to have home hospice care services at home, and while he was deteriorating, everything was going relatively well. His symptoms were under control. His family was well supported. They had additional support through the hospice, even pet therapy and music therapy in the home. So in as much as this march toward death is difficult, there are also moments of beauty, and he was having those. At some point, however, his pain became uncontrollable and he was admitted to an inpatient hospice facility where over the course of a few days, aggressive pain management was enacted. And he did get better control of his pain, was discharged back home, and then it was clear that he was entering the last stage of his life. And a few weeks later, he died peacefully at home in the presence of his family. And his family was then offered, as all families are, bereavement support for 13 months after the time of his death. So this is just a textbook, classically good case of seamless, synergistic collaboration between a specialist care of the oncologist, the family, the patient, and palliative and hospice care. So that's the best of a story. And I wanted to share that with you.
That answers so many things that I think people don't understand just in that story alone. Maybe you could give us kind of a brief idea of how you know, palliative and hospice came about in the United States.
Yeah, sure, of course. So hospice care was initiated as a specialty by a British physician named Dr. Dame Cicely Saunders in the early 1960s, and she founded a hospice in London, which still exists and is a beacon of learning and care for people towards end of life. She came to the United States to do a lecture in the early 60s at Yale, and she was well received. And it was 10 years later, however, until the first hospice in the United States was opened, and that was in Connecticut, and I believe that hospice still exists as well. We fast forward to now, and there are over 5,000 hospice agencies in the United States serving a little less than 2 million people. I think the latest statistic was 1.69 or 1.75 million. And this number increases 3 to 5% every year. So hospice has made great strides in offering services to people. The services are covered by Medicare, Medicaid, and many commercial insurances, and afford people the opportunity, anyone in fact, to have this lovely, compassionate care at home. And what hospice provides is an interdisciplinary team approach, as does palliative care. So there is an assessment done by a nurse, there are nurses' aides involved, always a social worker, offer of a chaplain, and then whatever other therapies or modalities that particular hospice may have on staff. And remembering that most hospices are not for profit and operate under Medicare guidelines, they are unable to provide 24/7 care at home. That burden, if you will, falls on the family and the patient. They do help them identify where they could get extra help should they need it. Hospice focuses on the quality of the person's life. So it is this holistic look at a person, not just putting them in the box of their symptoms or just their family or just their situation, but looking at the view of the whole whole person and their whole environment. Every week, the hospice team has a meeting about every patient and discusses all of the things that are happening inside the home so that they are afforded the best quality of whole care. Most hospice care is done at home. And then there are also inpatient facilities where a person, if they need pain management, such as Sam did, or there are respite visits whereby if the primary caregiver is remarkably burdened at home, or sometimes if they have to travel, then the patient can be inside of an inpatient hospice for up to, I think, 5 days for respite. Also, nursing homes provide hospice as well. So if a person is a resident of a nursing home and hospice can be initiated, it can also be managed there. My understanding right now of the average length of stay in hospice is about 77 days. So this is up significantly from when I first came on board in hospice, when the average length of stay was like 6 days. And many people, about 30%, die within the first week, but many, many people are living longer because of the amazing care they're getting, their symptoms are managed, and once again, their whole being is being addressed, as is their family.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's exactly what my family found when we used hospice services for 14 days. We could have benefited greatly by calling hospice sooner. So I hate to jump into palliative, but how is that different and how did that come about after hospice?
Yeah, so hospice was around and then suddenly so many medical providers started to realize that this value-laden quality or type of care did not have to be limited to only people who are in the last stage of their life, yeah, but to anyone who is experiencing a life-limiting illness or injury that throughout the whole course of it. So I know you have some graphics of this, but there is always an umbrella that pictures palliative care, under which are all of these services of psychosocial support, symptom management, spiritual support, goals of care, advanced directives. So palliative care can be thought of as something that is initiated earlier on in the course of an illness or a disease. Frequently, it is initiated, as you illustrated, by a nurse inside of a hospital. Many hospitals, 75% of all hospitals in the United States with bed counts over 300 have palliative care programs. There are 160 fellowship programs in the United States training physicians to be specialized in hospice and palliative medicine. There are almost 5,000 boarded hospice and palliative medicine doctors. There are also palliative care outpatient clinics. So it can be initiated, as is hospice, by the patient themselves. They can call the palliative care service if they find out about it. Their physicians, their nurse can initiate it through the physician, their specialty physician, or their primary care doctor. So this can be started, both palliative care and hospice, by the voice of the patient. It does not have to be initiated on the medical side of the hospice and palliative care is to alleviate suffering at this time and through the whole course of an illness and at the end of life.
And I want to be sure that I mention that people can go to the nhpco.org website to get more information on hospice and palliative. I want to move on and I want to talk about the topic that makes many people really uncomfortable. You know what one that is. And that, we have just a couple minutes for that, just so.
Okay, yeah. So medical aid in dying, or death with dignity, is a topic that's been around the United States for several decades, but didn't have a loud voice until the last 25 years when the first legislation was passed in Oregon. And what this legislation allows is this, and this is true in all of the 10 states where it is now legal and the several states where it is pending. A person needs to be over the age of 18, have a prognosis, and that means a life expectancy in terms of time of less than 6 months. They need to have a terminal illness. They need to be able to express their thoughts about this clearly and competently. They need to not be being coerced by anyone, and they need to be a resident of the state in which they are pursuing the legislation and be able to self-administer the medication. So this is done orally in our country. In several other countries, it's injectable medicine, but here in the United States, it is taken orally. The cost of this, because it is not covered by any insurance, is somewhere about $1,000 to a couple thousand dollars, depending on where you are. There are many nuances to the laws in each of the states. There is a mandatory waiting period in our state in Colorado of 15 days between being seen by the first doctor and the second doctor before the prescription can be dispensed. In Oregon, they just shortened the waiting period, in some cases determined by the physician, to 2 days. I imagine that will change in many of the states as time goes by. Over the course of the 25 plus years that this has been acceptable in our country, these legislations have been passed. Not very many people have utilized. I believe the number is less than 4,000 over 25 years. So it's not as if there is this enormous movement for people to take medicine to end their lives. But it is a choice that they make of self-determination during a very delicate and difficult time to exercise their right to have their voice heard. And I'm so proud to have been part of that movement here in Colorado.
Can you tell people where to go for more information? Where would they go if they want to look into their state's rules and all of that?
Yeah. So there are three websites, actually. One is deathwithdignity.org. Is it org? I can't remember all of a sudden. .org, deathwithdignity.org. The other one is compassionandchoices.org. And then there is another one, acamade.org. And that also has a section, a drop-down menu for patients and your state. I find that Death with Dignity is a very, very helpful website for patients and families. You can click on any your state and then see what the laws are. And you can also Google end of life legislation in your state and see if there is legislation, if it's pending, if it's failed, and how active it is.
And I think it's valuable to go to those websites because, in addition to what Sky said, it just really supports the fact that this is a choice. It's something that's very misunderstood. Sky, how can people find you and reach out to you?
My website is Skylight, SKYELIGHTLLC.com, and you can reach out and leave a message. I am just sort of getting this started. I just recently retired, so it's all sort of new, but exciting to be able to still be able to communicate and help people maneuver through this very difficult landscape, not unlike what you have done with your books about caregiving and how to maneuver. This is just, I am full of information to be able to help people get through this maze because it is a maze and I have experienced it myself. So I understand the difficulty and the challenges we face when talking about these very, very tender and delicate subjects.
Is there anything else you want the audience of Care Heroes to know?
Well, I would summarize to say this one thing, that hospice care, palliative care, the goal of both of those philosophies and concepts and models of care is this one thing: to meet the patient and the family where they are. So it is not an agenda-driven service. It's us coming in and saying, how can we help you? By listening and listening to the voice of the patient so that they can voice what their choices are. We give information. They have a voice. We listen.
Absolutely. And I would add on to that, people wait way too long to use these services and they're outstanding. I want to thank you, Sky, for joining me today and sharing such great information and website resources. I know the information will help many. I want to remind the listeners that the downloadable PDF from today's show will be on the Care Hero radio page of trishlaub.com. And also, that downloadable PDF will have the link to Kelly Bone's interview with Being Patient and the article I wrote for them. So thank you. I want to thank you all for tuning in today and sharing this time with me. There's so much, much more that to come, and I would love to hear from you. So if you could go to the trishlaub.com radio page and give me your questions, your comments, topics you want to hear. This show is yours. It's for you to hear about things that you want to hear about. While you're there, download the PDFs and sign up for my newsletter. Please join me on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month at 12 Pacific and 3 Eastern. Next time on February 23rd, I'll meet you here with a special guest, Alex Del Gaudio, who has a different kind of care hero experience to share. You definitely don't want to miss this. Before I go, I want to take a minute to comment on something in the recent news. Tony Bennett's family recently announced that he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 4 years ago at age 80. I'm sorry, 90. He was 90. Several organizations have commented and referred to his diagnosis as initiating a fight. I have this to say. It will be a fight if that is what is perceived. Language is critical to how we experience everything from beauty to dementia diagnosis and the care we provide. I'll be doing an episode in April about the impact of our word choices. Please don't let the irresponsible word choices of others propagate a stigma that is untrue, unwarranted, and so very damaging. And this applies to all diagnoses. Join me the 23rd when we will celebrate a different kind of care hero with Alex. And until then, remember, you are a true care hero.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Laub, and for your care hero courage. Tune in next time on Transformation Talk Radio as we explore life-changing care hero topics to assist you on your journey. In the meantime, I would love to hear any tips or insights that you've taken away with you today. So head on over to trishlaub.com. That's Trish Laub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com, and leave a comment, a question you would like answered, or a topic you'd like to hear about in the future. And while you're there, be sure to subscribe to my newsletter. So raise a cup and let's toast to all the amazing care heroes out there giving it their all. Until next time, remember that you are true heroes.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.